Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up? This
is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
What's up? Hey, man, what's your name?
Join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to the weekend. How are you, Earl?
It's the weekend again, man. It seems like a prize, right?
Yeah, it was a short one this week.
Yeah, man.
3-day weeks are shorter.
Hey, but look, Sandy. You're a retired guy. Mm. It doesn't matter whether it's Monday or Sunday for you, right?
Or Saturday.
Or Saturday.
Or Wednesday.
How's that feel?
I don't know. It's been quite a while now, so it's hard to remember how it didn't feel. No, actually, I enjoyed work, and I try to do things that are like work. I mean, this isn't like work, but you know, I have to show up at 8, and actually, I kind of enjoyed everything I did as much as I enjoy this. You know, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, it's Sandy Williams. It's Friday. My co-host Sandy Williams is in the studio. Sandy, there's so much going on. As always, sometimes you scrape and scrap to try to find some news. But there's news everywhere now, locally.
In fact, have to scrape and scrap was the vacuum that Donald Trump could fill every day.
If you didn't have any other news, you could always.
There was always that.
Yeah, and that's there constantly.
We have him and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert.
And now we have
Jim Jordan,
and now we have Robin Voss as he is whining and crying and sniveling and saying that Governor Evers lied to him. Is it proper, Sandy, to say that the governor of a state is a liar?
Well,
is that proper? I mean, if you were
truth is a defense. If it was true,
yeah.
But I lied. The negotiations I participated in that level of stuff, and the negotiations over a budget are very complicated. And I'm confident that nothing was explicitly agreed upon that Evers would have backed out on, that anything Robin Voss could now accuse Evers of hedging about.
He said lie.
Lie.
Right?
Well, you know.
That's a strong word.
It's a very strong word, and I'd be very surprised. Politically, it's not a game that people play very much. Although things are so polarized now in Madison that I suspect the level of trust between Republicans and Democrats, particularly at the Senate level and with the governor, are probably kind of slim. But no, I don't buy that. You know, I think that there was probably some agreement that the Senate was going to pass a budget that said something. Okay, and I'm sure that Evers did not agree that he wouldn't veto it or he wouldn't have vetoed it.
So Sandy, we do know that Robin Voss and Republicans spent a lot of time. When the governor first puts his budget out, and the legislature picked apart his budget and said, basically threw it in the trash, and said, "We're going to make our own."
Right.
That's exactly what they said. And now when they put theirs together and it goes before the governor, and how can you think that you've thrown his in the trash, that he's somehow going to agree with everything that you put there?
Well, the Department of Administration is the budget building agency, all right? And even the other party, the has to rely on the Department of Administration to provide them. They and the Legislative Reference Bureau that drafts legislation, and budgets are complicated, very complicated processes. Yeah, but they are complicated because they go pretty deep into each agency's expenditures, and they're many pages long, And a negotiation over tends to negotiate over high points and not every point. And so I'm confident that it's that fact that it doesn't negotiate every point that gives the governor the leeway to use his veto pencil or pen on occasion and on the occasions where there wasn't an explicit agreement. You know, the dynamics, particularly in a situation where you've got a supermajority in the Senate, is that the leverage is pretty limited. The Assembly and Senate are Republican controlled, so the budget that passes is going to have to be something that the Republicans agree with and want, right? So they will probably substantially rewrite whatever the executive proposed budget was from the governor's office. And that's even the case if you've got a mixed legislature. But in this case, it's probably quite true that the budget was probably very much rewritten in the process of what got passed by the Assembly and Senate.
So if that's the case, and it's pretty safe to say it was, then it shouldn't have been a surprise that the governor was going to kind of take his hatchet.
Well, no, but I mean, this definitely would be negotiation because the governor has this partial veto power. He has leverage,
right.
and he particularly has leverage when the Assembly does not have a supermajority of Republicans. So the Assembly can block the override of the veto by simply sticking to party lines on their votes. So there definitely would be negotiation because to the extent, this is I'm leap of faith here, to the extent that the both parties are interested in actually accomplishing something, you would want to negotiate over the things you actually want to accomplish so that you would be confident they would actually get accomplished and not be line item vetoed. So I'm confident that to the extent that that Voss and the Republicans had something they really wanted to accomplish, it was the subject of negotiation. I think that what happened was the Democrats had things they really wanted to accomplish. And the Republicans then said, okay, but if you really want to accomplish that, then you're going to have to trade here, and you're going to have to trade this for that. And so there were things included in the budget at the request of the Democrats that were done in exchange for promises probably that the veto would not be used with respect to certain things.
So
Voss might be accusing Evers of vetoing something that where it was agreed that he wouldn't veto it, but I pretty seriously doubt that.
So nothing unusual about the process that occurred. That's normal process.
Normal process. Yeah. I mean, what's abnormal is when you have a Senate and Assembly that are, and it's happened for quite a while now.
Polar opposites.
We have polar opposites. And that hasn't been the case that often in the history of the state.
So this thing that Governor Evers did, just
where he bought 425 years or 22 or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's so that's in. Come on, that's not going to happen. I mean,
what do you mean it's not? Yeah, it happened.
It has to be over. It's not there in perpetuity.
No, that language could get changed in the next budget,
right?
If you had all Republicans in the state house and in both houses, I suppose they'd go and change that. But as it stands, it's in the law and is the law. But budget provisions like this that say that something's going to be in place until a future time period are subject to being changed by future legislatures, and so it's not really and lots of. Almost every governor has used the line item veto, sometimes with tongue in cheek, to accomplish some remarkable things. It's basically there to demonstrate how smart the staff of the governor is in terms of what it is they're able to dream up that they could do. And this one is pretty good.
So for those of us who don't understand the legalese of all of those things, this is not... The Republicans, what options do they have that he's vetoed these things?
They can override the veto, which takes two-thirds vote. in the Assembly and Senate. So in the Assembly, though, it'd have to be Democrats would have to vote for it because
for the override,
because the Republicans do not have a two-thirds majority in the Assembly,
which is not going to happen.
Which is not going to happen, I presume. So, which means that however, whatever the words are in this bill after the line item vetoes, and you understand the line item allows crossing out, and so far, Supreme Court has not overruled the notion that the crossing out can be parts of words. Okay, it doesn't even have to be whole words. So what happened here was he crossed out parts of numbers, and he created, you know, a number that was
He snookered him.
Well, snookered would suggest that he went back on his word.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So.
Well, you had a wordsmith, so I got to be careful with that. But you know, Sandy, it has really infuriated the Republicans, and they can't figure out. And Robin Voss, this made national news, Sandy.
It made national news, I think, because of the ironic nature of the line item veto, which allows this kind of a whimsical approach to crossing out words or parts of words or some words in a sentence and not the whole sentence. And you can really change the meaning. You can turn positives into negatives. You can turn negatives into positives. You can change dates, it turns out, by if there are enough numbers in a row that allow you to cross out some numbers and create a new number.
So now that this has occurred, is it safe to say it's going to probably drum up what can they do about the line item veto? Can they?
Well, what they can do is it's a matter of constitutional power.
Okay, moving forward.
Well, I suspect what Robin Voss will do is ask the state Supreme Court to rule on what the extent of the power of the line item veto is.
Which is soon to become a Democratic state Supreme Court.
Well, so yeah, maybe that won't work for him. But that's the only remedy other than amending the Constitution. Is to just to get the Supreme Court to decide what the constraints are.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That's Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
Three to four, Matt Flynn direct. Four to six, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And six to seven, the Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy skies today with daytime highs approaching 78. Easterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Chance for scattered rain showers, 59. Chance for scattered showers tomorrow. Highs around 77. Partly cloudy. Mainly clear skies Sunday.
You can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, it's not just that the governor, you know, did that with education. The Republican-led legislature had just about guaranteed this major $3.5 billion tax cut that Governor Evers brought down to $175 million. 3.5 billion to 175.
Well, he reduced the tax cut so that it only affected essentially the lowest income brackets. And so what he said was, okay, we're going to lower the tax, but we're going to do it for people who earn, I think it was $36,000 right. or less was the number. And, you know, that's one of the things, that's the kind of thing that the line item veto was intended for. And I think the answer to Robin Voss there is not the Supreme Court talking about what the line item veto could cover, but the answer to that one to Robin Voss is, yeah, get a Republican elected governor next time if you want to control that problem. Because, you know, their proposal for the tax cuts, I'm confident, was not agreed to by the governor. And the governor was squawking about it all the way to the end, you know, that it was improperly aimed at the wealthiest and it was unfair and it was not, you know, not progressive. It was regressive and whatever. So it was without taking a position on it, which, you know, it clearly was the result of an actual policy dispute, and the governor got the upper hand.
You know, Sandy, you constantly talk about a myriad of things that you know impact and the least amongst the people with daycare and all those things.
Yeah.
The governor put money back in to support the daycares.
Right.
That upset. Yeah, the right thing to do, right?
Absolutely the right thing to do. I mean, you know, to me, the Republican passed budget had so many scratch my head, who are they trying to help? Why are they trying to hurt people with this kinds of things in it? And the most glaring to me was the elimination of the daycare, the $300 million program for daycare for kids, because, you know, every kid that has to be taken out of daycare takes a worker out of the job market. We have a shortage of workers in Wisconsin. The reason they're in daycare is because some parent needs to work or wants to work. you're cutting down the value of the quality of the upbringing of the child by getting rid of daycare. I mean, it's in every way a negative investment in the state of Wisconsin to take out the daycare program, and yet they seem to do it with glee. It's like they were treating daycare like a handout,
right?
And you know, it's not a handout. You know, the American public and the American political process is, I think, failing to take into account the kinds of things that are actually public investments in people and not handouts.
So the
public health is a public investment in the public's welfare, not in individual welfare. The public's investment in education is an investment for everyone, not for people. It's not a handout. It's an investment. You know, the old Soviet Union used to pay students to go to school, and they, you know, they did it because there was a clear recognition of the value of education, and they wanted to basically train people in the concept of jobs.
So Sandy, this clearly does nothing to bring the Republicans and the Democrats, the state level, closer together. Governor Evers apparently had clearly no other choice other than to do some of these things because he basically was forced into a corner.
Well, you know, I think that the public generally, and I'm confident that Robin Voss and the legislature have wanted to think that Evers was a milquetoast, okay?
Yeah.
An easy guy, doesn't like confrontation. Well, he's certainly a very civilized guy. He's not a guy to throw mud at people. He's not not name calling, but maybe he's not a milquetoast. And I think that maybe this budget was an opportunity for him to demonstrate that he could roll up his sleeves and participate in bare knuckle political fighting.
Well, but to say we're never going to work with him again. Well,
they didn't do much. They haven't done much working with him in the past.
Well, we can't trust him. And I'm like, okay, you can't trust him. Let's see. He probably is not going to run again. So I don't think that, you know, this working together with him is going to be something that we can see change.
Well, I think the first thing to figure out is whether, in fact, he really welched on anything or not, or whether Robin Voss is angry because he got one-upped here.
Yeah.
And I think it's my guess, just because in the internals of politics, welching on agreements in politics is not a very common phenomena, okay? And so my view is that what happened here is that Robin Voss got one-upped. They didn't think far enough ahead to take the steps necessary to make that budget.
It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, Ukraine. It's not going away, Sandy.
Yeah,
and there's so many things in the news today about different sectors of what's happening in Ukraine. And one of them is, you know, Ukraine wants to speed up their acceptance into NATO. I kind of understand why, right? I mean,
well, there's no question why they would want that. You know, the problem, in fact, I think that Zelensky was just in the Czech Republic saying this. He's making sort of a tour of some NATO countries, talking about what he would like NATO to do for Ukraine, one of them being, hey, hurry up and get us in. If Ukraine was a part of NATO, then the cooperative defense article that dictates the alliance would require that each of the countries take all the steps they would take in defense of themselves in defense of Ukraine, which would mean that boots on the ground in Ukraine. None of the countries have been willing to do that, and they aren't going to now let Ukraine into NATO so that they now would be required to do it. Okay, so that's not going to happen. But the sorry thing is that this war has gotten to the point where, you know, the potential outcome is going to be dictated by either the war or diplomacy, and it gets harder to have a diplomatic settlement in the context of a war than it would have been to have a diplomatic settlement reached in a peaceful negotiation, albeit with the threat of Russia's army on the border of Ukraine. But a negotiation at that point in which Ukraine would have negotiated within and given credence to the hegemony, the power of Russia in that region, and therefore likely would have promised never to join NATO, which was a promise Zelensky, within 3 weeks of the invasion, announced that there was not an interest on the part of Ukraine in joining NATO, okay, that he would agree,
right.
And he would agree to that. And I think that he would still, in a negotiated settlement, agree that Ukraine would not join NATO in exchange for some kind of determination about how the neutrality of Ukraine would be defended by the rest of the countries, including Russia and NATO. And what's happening now is they're interviewing soldiers or interviewing anonymous officials in Ukraine, all of whom are saying, gee, it's looking a little less likely, like we're going to have a battlefield victory in which we evict Russia from all of Ukraine. So therefore, it seems likely that we'll have a diplomatic settlement. Yes, duh. That was the situation on day one. If the diplomatic settlement was the way this war was going to end. And the United States, my understanding at least, has been that we have not been essentially enthusiastic supporters of a diplomatic settlement for Ukraine. And we've told publicly what we said is Ukraine has the reins of these horses, and they're going to tell us what kind of settlement they want. But everyone in the world knows that behind the scenes, the United States holds the reins because, you know, we are arming Ukraine and NATO with us, are arming Ukraine. Without that support, Ukraine is a dead duck.
So we've invested well over $200 billion in Ukraine. just for an idea, the budget of the state of Wisconsin is, you know, what, about $50 billion a year. We've already invested $200 billion in Ukraine. And I was reading this. Donors are war weary, so Ukraine soldiers get creative for funds. A robust fundraising operation has been critical in supplying Ukraine's military. But as the war drags on, contributions are lagging. So there's less and less resources to support the war in Ukraine. People early on, out of just compassion and not and hating to see what was going on, were making major donations.
Yeah, I mean,
that's dropped off.
Yeah, well, the notion of realpolitik, that the Kissinger, the style of international affairs that existed up until the 1990s when the Soviet Union fell apart, and we ended up with neoconservative approach of the United States would exert its hegemony over the world and would spread democracy everywhere. Before that, the notion was that we would recognize the real power and the real interest of the United States, hence realpolitik,
right.
The real interest of the United States in places, and we would not extend our, essentially, our military support beyond the area of real interest of the United States. Ukraine is clearly not an area of real interest of ours. It's an ideological interest, not a real interest, because it's clear that if Ukraine gets to the point of losing this war, we aren't going to step up our support. We're backing off. That's the political direction. Same thing with Europe. If Europe had a real interest in this, they would be increasing their support, not talking about their interest in supporting it waning as the war drags on and as it becomes less likely that Ukraine is going to be successful. So that's a clear indicator that tells us that we don't have a real politic interest in Ukraine. We have an ideological interest that doesn't extend to our real security interest.
So is it safe to say, Sandy, kind of now, because there was supposedly some belief that when this initiative, this summer push, that we'd see if Ukraine could make the gains necessary of pushing Russia out, that maybe then we'd say, okay, we see some signs, we can keep this thing going. But they're seeing now they're not able to push Russia out of those areas. Do you think it's now a time where, again, less money coming in from donations, that the United States is going to be one that finally says?
Well, I mean, the fear or suspicion, let's put it that way, the suspicion has been, that this is a proxy war, okay, that the United States has Russia involved in a war in Ukraine where we're arming Ukraine. And as Lindsey Graham said, in recognition of the proxy war aspect, this is the best money we've ever invested because we've got lots of Russians dying in Ukraine. And if that's the impetus here, then as the Ukrainians start dying at a faster rate than Russia, then the war of attrition loses its capacity. It loses its legs, right? It's not going to last very long if the attrition starts going the wrong direction. And so, you know, I think that's the concern the United States has, because I think that as long as Russia was losing a lot more men and people than Ukraine, and as long as Ukraine was fighting a war of attrition with Russia that they could sustain, we were willing to participate in that, even if it didn't mean driving Russia out of Ukraine or achieving battlefield victories.
So President Biden still is one who believes that we need to keep supporting Ukraine in this. He's basically going, well, not all in, but he's looking at different ways that we need to keep this thing going, i.e. now with these cluster bombs that he's offering, our nation and the ammunition is an issue now. It's starting to become more and more troublesome for us to give Ukraine the ammunition that they need. So now they're offering these things that have been banned called cluster weapons.
Yeah, cluster bombs. And you know, the cluster bombs end up creating minefields. Only a certain percentage of the munitions that are dropped in these clusters actually go off. And then some of them are planted on the ground as traps for tanks and things that might. So they're like a dropping from the sky,
right.
A minefield. You know, we've long talked about the dangers of minefield, and we condemned the war in the Serbians for the
right.
All the mines that they laid in what was Yugoslavia, and there have been hundreds and thousands of people maimed and injured by those mines. We point at that.
Innocent people.
And that's the problem with minefields, is that they last until someone steps on them, and that can happen decades after the war if they aren't discovered. No, I mean, it's a very troublesome thing. My hope has always been that with the bravado with which we speak about supporting Ukraine is designed to bring Russia to the negotiating table. But the rumors from the international theater are that the United States has not been encouraging Ukraine to go to the negotiating table. So I fear that our bravado is maybe based on something else, which is Lindsey Graham's theory of making sure that lots of Russians die on the battlefield. So I think cluster bombs, you know, we used napalm in Vietnam, and all of America knew about it. We weren't, I don't think, in clear recognition at the time that we were essentially violating the Geneva Convention with the use of napalm. And we used it from the sky, and we used it on the ground. You know, we had weapons shooting fire
right.
into tunnels that were man-made and held, and we also dropped napalm from the sky.
War is hell, right?
War is hell, and apparently the Geneva Convention doesn't apply any more to us than it does to the limited number of countries that have used cluster munitions, which includes Iran, Iraq, Russia, and the United States.
You know, Sandy, I think that the American people don't really care about this anymore, the majority of the American people. It's not on our radar anymore. And maybe, I don't know, Sandy, if it's because the media is not every night inundating us with photos and all of those things, but the American people is kind of like, okay, if you and I don't bring this up, I don't think there are a lot of people sitting around, Sandy, talking about the war in Ukraine and Russia. I just don't think it matters as much to the American people.
I think the problem is that the exit strategy or the end game has never been something America's been very good about conceptualizing in the context of the use of our military or the use of our military might, okay? And so, you know, the end game in Afghanistan when we armed the Mujahideen, which ended up being, Osama bin Laden, who turned around and blew up a couple of buildings in the United States, that was part of the end game of what we did there. And the end game here is hard to visualize. There are some now commentators who are speculating that if the war goes on and if Ukraine really loses its capacity to fight, and if Russia actually overwhelms Ukraine instead of having a diplomatic settlement, that then the United States will be forced to go to war with Russia over Russia's conquest of Ukraine, which is a horrible endgame, okay? And it's not an endgame that we would have volunteered for at the beginning of this. And if in the beginning of this, we probably would have let Zelensky negotiate on his own with Russia to solve this Eastern European problem, not an American problem.
So, you know, Sandy, I was talking about this yesterday. Mike Pence was saying that he kind of thinks that the American troops will eventually, if something doesn't hurry up and happen, he could see the American troops on the ground fighting Russia because we can't let Russia move. I mean, just a crazy thought, right?
Yes.
I mean, for a guy who's running to win the nomination, to think for president of the United States, you know, to even mention that, to me, is the height of insanity. You would think he would know better. He's former vice president of the United States.
Well, he was former vice president under Donald Trump, and the level of hyperbole that was used during that administration was very high with respect to talking responsibly about international affairs. Remember when we were going to firebomb and create a hell for North Korea or for Iran? You know, I mean, we haven't been one to speak with much restraint.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Since Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine last year, many Ukrainian military units have relied heavily on donations and charitable funds to supply their troops with much-needed supplies like first aid kits, body armor, vehicles, and even drones. Let's go to the phone lines. David from Mequon. Good morning, David. You say what?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. So, Earl, I know you keep saying it's insanity. You know what was insanity? That we went through two world wars in the 20th century, and we had tens of millions of people that died. What people are not realizing, I'm going to bring this to attention to both of you, because I'm not sure how aware you guys might be potentially with what's actually going on, why Ukraine is actually doing so well against the Russians.
We know why they're doing well. They're being armed by the United States.
No, they're using the most advanced artificial intelligence, which is essentially, you know, they're using robots and computers to fight the battle. And all you have to do, Earl, I'm just telling you, this is a fact. I'm not telling you a lie. I'm not being some conspiracist or anything like that. Type in Ukraine and artificial intelligence. That is a whole new state of warfare that we are now seeing in the battlefield, which we have never seen before. This is a game changer that will have an impact on every single human being.
So David, where did they get the finances?
Well, I think, I mean, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal talking about this as well. I mean, I'm confident that AI is being used. And Ukraine, like Russia, has always been a country filled with hackers. You know, half of the hacking crimes that occurred in the United States in terms of having identities stolen were done by Ukrainians. So Ukraine is filled with very ingenious capacity for both computer usage and, I'm sure now, artificial intelligence applications. I'm pretty sure that Russia, as it wakes up to the difficulty of the war, will be using its own capacities in that regard, but I don't know what. But yes, that might be why Ukraine is doing well. I mean, they couldn't do well without munitions. You know, knowing what the enemy is going to do is one thing, but then being able to resist it or defeat it on the battlefield is the second thing. So the AI helps you strategically, but it doesn't really help you otherwise. It does help you with drones, but I think the use of drones has become quite equivalent on both sides in the war. We had that conversation, but then what? You know, does that prolong the war? Does that increase the likelihood that Ukraine will prevail in the war? Or does it just simply indicate that it'll be a long-term stalemate and that that a diplomatic solution will still be the ultimate outcome.
So can I respond?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, what changed the Second World War was using nuclear bombs. That ended the war with Japan. They thought, okay, we're going to do this. That immediately ceased everything that which Japan had was shooting for.
Well, incidentally, though, the evidence now is that Japan was already in peace negotiations before the dropping of the first bomb in Hiroshima.
Oh, okay,
so,
right.
So, you know, it's not clear that...
The bombs are what sealed it, though, because they couldn't believe their tremendous power that they had with one bomb killing, a couple hundred thousand people instantaneously, essentially.
So your point, David.
So, but do you think AI is going to have the same effect as the nuclear bomb in terms of shifting power from once? And you think it's shifting power to the side of Ukraine?
Right now it is, because Russia does not have that same technology as Ukraine does. They're actually ahead of Russia as far as one of the things that we've noticed. I think we kind of figured that Russia, well, listen, they are a military power, a huge one. However, they're antiquated. They have very old equipment, and it's not working the way it should be. They have been using some new technology, but you saw what happened with the Wagner Group. They shot down one of their most,
Dave, you're almost acting as if the United States' involvement with the AI, that we haven't played a role financially. I mean, Ukraine is not.
Of course we have, but Ukraine is taking it to a whole new level. And like I said, I've been reading the articles on this, not just the Wall Street Journal, but many different types of articles. I've been studying this because I've been curious myself as to, okay, here we are a year plus later, and Ukraine has been pushing back, even though the military might of Russia is substantially larger. It's like David versus Goliath that you're seeing, okay? So how is David, aka Ukraine, able to push back against Russia? And so in reading all these articles, and you're looking, and people have been warning about this forever, and even at the U.S. federal level, what would happen if AI becomes more powerful and what have you? And it's scary, because at the end of the day, when you're using drones or you're using computers and everything, you literally don't even need to send men in the battle. You just send in, these robots and drones and everything else to do the dirty work for you.
Well, so
I'm saying this is a new level of war that we're seeing, that we're experiencing, that we're just starting to get to understand.
Well, I don't disagree that AI is going to play a big role in military in the future. It surely will, and it's beginning to play it in this theater. But still, the capacity to use it requires that you have weapons, whether it be man-controlled or AI-controlled, that you have the munitions that can then employ the intelligence. And there's a drone shortage developing on both sides, actually. Russia had to reach into Iran to supplement its drone capacity. But I think you're right about AI, David. I just don't think that you're right that it's going to be the factor that's
the game changer.
The game changer, yeah.
All right, got to go to the break. We'll come back on the other side, 844-967-2789. Be right back.